There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume.
We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass,
or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want, because this is...
Mystery Playhouse. 90.1.
Good evening, and welcome once more to the Mystery Playhouse. I am the Count, your host of hell. Come in. I'd like you to meet a few permanent guests to the Mystery Playhouse. Over there is someone related to the great Dr. Frankenstein. Except this gentleman's name is Frankenfurter. He's much more of a ham, huh?
Yes.
And next to him is Louis XVI, the once great ruler of France. But now he's just a ghost, or should I say, heir to the throne, huh?
Yes.
He's one king, you might say, had his crown French toasted, huh?
Yes.
He's still very upset, but like I tell him, I say, Louis, it's not worth losing your head over, huh? And there's his deceased wife, Marie Antoinette. When she said, let them eat cake, she never guessed it would be caked with her blood, huh?
Yes.
And when she found that out, she was a total basket case. In fact, her head's still encased there, huh?
Well,
in case you don't know what evil we have saved for you tonight, let me go ahead and tell, huh?
Yes.
We will hear from the Oblong Box, from Weird Circle, and the Whistler will bring us two wives. But first, the Chateau Inn, Revenge of the Chateau, so scary!
Ladies and gentlemen, the Shadow's exciting adventure will start in just a moment. But first, I have an announcement that should be set screaming across every front page in America. Because it's all about the safest thing on wheels. The new Goodrich Safety Silvertown tire with the Lifesaver Tread. Imagine, not only does this sensational Silvertown give you the greatest skid protection you have ever known, and Golden Ply blowout protection that has already saved thousands of motorists' lives, it gives you both of these life-saving features at no extra cost. The new Goodrich Lifesaver Tread has a truly amazing action on wet, slippery roads. It does to the rain-drenched roads what your windshield wiper does to the windshield. Its spiral bars that never end act like a whole battery of windshield wipers. They sweep the water right and left, force it out through deep drainage grooves, make a dry track for the rubber to grip. Don't let a skid endanger your life. Don't let a blowout throw your car out of control. Start riding on the new Goodrich, spelled G-O-O-D-R-I-C-H, Goodrich Safety Silvertown. The sooner, the safer.
The Shadow, who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret: the hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's drama, The Shadow's Revenge. In a cell in a large Midwestern penitentiary, two convicts sit on the edge of a lower bunk. One, a big, swarthy man, pretends to read a newspaper several days old. The other pretends to tie his shoe.
Just got the tip-off from the boys. Everything's set, Rocco.
Hey, we know at the end of the quarter, they'll fix.
Yeah, all set.
Okay, Regan, you know what to do. Make it good.
Suppose we get separated.
I told you where the car will be. Meet me there.
Check. Here goes.
God! Man! Seek! God! God!
All right, now what's going on down here?
Regan, God, he just keeled over and started moaning like this.
Okay, stand back from the door. I'm coming in. Now, what's the matter, Regan? Where's it hurt?
Right here. It hurts awful.
Yeah, I don't see
it. It won't hurt. No!
What a wallop. You like to kill him, Rocco?
Got the gab. Grab his gun. I got his keys. Come on. Here's the window. Cover me, Regan. I'm going out.
Right. Okay, Regan. Jump. All clear down here.
Come on, Tom. Now what, Rocco?
The car's waiting for us where Annie left us. We got to make it.
Duck!
They've turned on the spotlight. They must have found a guard. We got to run for it.
Rocco? Looks deserted.
What do you expect Annie to do, Regan? Set up a flock of floodlights to welcome you? Well, I give this signal.
I'm going to just raise the shade in that front room.
Okay, that's the all clear.
Let's go.
Yeah?
Okay, Annie, open up. It's me, Rocco.
Inside, quick. I didn't think you'd make it, Rocco. You two are really hot. Come on, I got close to you in the car.
No, I ask, is there any way to greet a guy that's been sitting it out in stir for 5 years? Come here, Annie.
Cut it out, Rocco. You ain't got time to doodle around. You got to get moving. I can meet you out of town someplace.
You won't have to meet me anyplace, baby. I'm not going out of town.
What?
I got business here first.
Business? Not that guy Cranston you're always talking
That's
about.
That's right, Annie. I swore I'd pay him for that one-way ticket to the big house. You wouldn't want me to renege on a debt, would you?
You'll never make it, Rocco.
Every copper in the country's got your picture, and it ain't because you're pretty.
No copper's gonna grab me, Annie. I had a long time to think about it. 5 long years in a cheese box. All I could think of was catching up with Cranston 5 long years. I ain't passing up the chance now.
What's the big surprise you said you had?
Well, I'm not sure myself. Margot Shreve called me a little while ago and was quite insistent I take a ride with him in his new cab.
New cab?
Yes, his old one just about fell apart on him. Oh, no. Tell me it isn't so.
What is... Is it Shreve placed up there on top of that handsome
cab? No, I've seen everything.
Hello, Mr. Cranston, Miss Lane.
Hello, Shreve.
How do you like my new cab? How do you like it?
Shreve, what's the idea?
Well, a new cab I couldn't get, Mr. Cranston, so I figured this is better than nothing. I figured this is better than... get in, I'll take you for a ride.
Well,
oh, come on, Lamont, let's.
Okay. All right, in you go, darling.
Right.
Down the avenue, Mr. Cranston? You wouldn't know it. When you go slow, you wouldn't know it.
Down the avenue will be fine. Shreve, what's this?
That's a portable radio, Mr. Cranston. Maybe my Fairlight's romantic music may be right.
This is really a surprise, Lamont. Let's have some music on the radio.
All right, Don.
Now we bring you a special warning from Police Commissioner Weston. Al Rocco and Ed Regan, the two convicts who escaped from Lockmore Penitentiary, are still at large. Police are baffled by the fact that neither Rocco nor Regan have made any attempt to break through the blockade thrown around the metropolitan area. Both men may be holed up someplace in the center of the city and make...
What's the idea of turning it off, darling?
I'm taking no chances of you getting mixed up in that case. After all, we're out for a nice ride. Oh, Lamont.
What is it?
Did you see that gorgeous hat in that window? How do we stop this thing?
Oh, I might have known. Wait a minute, I'll wrap.
Right. There's something wrong, Mr. Clanson. Something's wrong.
Gotta stop, Shrevey. Miss Lane saw a hat she'd like to try on.
Okay. Whoa there.
Thanks, Shrevey. I won't be a minute, Lamont.
Mm-hmm. I'm beginning to see why these things went out of style. A man couldn't go a block in one without his wife seeing a hat or a frock in a window.
Yeah, you save money on gas, all right. But I don't think the horse is going to replace the auto, Mr. Clanson. I don't think it's going to replace.
Look, Rocco, this is crazy. You'll be picked up sure. We're headed right for the middle of town.
I told you before, Annie. You do the drive and leave the rest to me.
Annie's right, Rocco. Look at all the cops around.
Relax, Regan. This is the last place they'd look for us, right under their nose.
You're not going to get anything out of this guy Cranston the Greek.
I know what I'm doing. You mind telling us, Rocco? Maybe like that we'll feel better. Okay. We're putting the snatch on Cranston.
Just like that. He walks up to you, gets into your car, and says, I'll go peaceful, Rocco, just like that.
Yeah, just like that, Annie.
So you get Cranston. That still don't get you past those roadblocks. You're still electric chair bait, Rocco.
That's what you think. This guy Cranston pulls plenty of weight with the cops, eh? They all know he's a buddy of Commissioner Weston's, don't they?
Oh, I begin to see what you mean.
And when you get in the clear?
When I get in the clear, Annie, I tattoo my initials on Cranston with a .45.
You was wanting something, Mr. Cranston? You was wanting?
Really, how long have we been waiting for Miss Lane? Seems like ages.
Well, we've been sitting here in a hack for half an hour with it.
What is it, Shrevey? Shrevey, what's the matter?
Well, if it ain't my old friend Lamont Cranston, I've been looking forward to seeing you again, pal.
Al Rocco.
Yeah, Al Rocco, remember? I made a date with you that last time we met. I said I'd be coming out to get you. Here I am.
Shrevey.
At the moment, I'm engaged, Mr. Cranston. A character is standing no less than 10 feet from me with his gun pointing right at my stomach with his gun pointing.
Ed Regan, I presume.
Still the smart cook, yeah, Cranston? Where's the dame?
Miss Lane? Well, I know she'll just hate missing you, but she didn't come along today. She had a little...
Gal, Rocco. She was in the hat store.
No, Marco, don't!
Shut up, Cranston.
Sorry, Lamont, I didn't... What's all this?
Rocco's the name, sister. Al Rocco. I was just inviting you and your friend Cranston to take a ride.
You'll never get away with this, Rocco. Don't you realize this is right in the heart of the biggest city in the world?
Yeah, pretty smooth, eh? All right, get out of this wagon and into the car. And no fuss. That is, unless you'd like to see your girlfriend splashed all over the sidewalk.
All right, Rocco.
Come on, get in, Rocco. There's a cop back there and I got a corner.
Okay. Inside the car, you two.
What about the monkey up in the back?
What do we need him for?
Not Shrevey. Rocco, don't.
Oh, no, sucker.
Shrevey.
Get going, Regan.
Up to the roadblock, Rocco. What are we going to do?
Nothing. Cranston's going to take us right through it, aren't you, Cranston?
You'll never make it, Rocco. The police
will
grab you.
Slow down. They're stopping the cars one by one. Go on. We're next. Remember, Cranston.
All right, folks. You'll have to... Oh, hello, Mr. Cranston. You can go through.
Hello, Cassidy. Look, Cassidy.
We're holding up the line, Lamont. We'd better go along.
Cassidy, look, these men...
They're piling up behind you, Mr. Cranston. Mind moving along?
Go on. You heard the officer.
I tried.
Sure, you tried. I told you what was going to happen if you crossed me.
Not here, Rocco. There may be other roadblocks. Can't you wait till we get to the hideout?
Okay. I'll give you just about another hour to be healthy, copper.
Lamont, are you all right?
My head. What happened, Margo?
It was Rocco. As soon as we were past the roadblock, he stopped the car and beat you over the head with his gun. How do you feel?
Pretty rugged. Where are we?
I don't know. Some kind of a hideout. They threw you into this back room. What's going to happen to us?
Not what they think, Margo. They're going to pay for the vicious murder of Sleevy.
How? What can we do?
We can't do anything, Margo. The Shadow can.
Listen, here they come.
All right, Margo, get back. Shadow's going to handle these killers.
I think we ought to stay out here any longer than we have to,
Rocco. We're staying until I square things up with Cranston.
What's his trouble?
I don't know. What are you laughing at, Cranston?
I'm the Shadow.
The guy
I've come for vengeance.
The crack on the skull must have sent him off his rocket.
I'm the Shadow.
Shut up, Cranston. Get back against the wall there.
Cranston? I am the Shadow.
Okay, so you're Napoleon. Now get back.
You can't see the Shadow. No man sees the Shadow.
Lamont, what's wrong? They can see you. You've lost your power.
That ain't all he's lost, lady. Stand away from
him. No, I won't let you do it.
Don't make it too tough on yourself. Just
come on, baby. Do like it.
Take your hands off her. I told you to stay out of my hair, sister. Now you're gone.
No, no.
Margo. You killed Margo.
In a moment, the Shadow will be back on the air with surprises, suspense, and a thrilling, unexpected climax. But meanwhile, here's something mighty important to bear in mind when you drive a car. Just remember that rainy days make the grass grow greener. They may bring out the best in flowers, but they bring out the worst in roads.
Yes, beware. A road that's plenty safe when dry may become a dangerous skid trap when wet, sending your car skidding, spinning, swerving off the road.
Motorist, why take this chance when you can now get a sensational new kind of tire that will stop you quicker, safer than you've ever stopped before? The new Goodrich Safety Silvertown with the Lifesaver Tread. Impartial tests conducted by the country's largest independent testing laboratory against the regular and premium price tires of America's six largest manufacturers proved that no tire tested, regardless of price, came up to the new Silvertown in non-skid action. Furthermore, these unbiased tests showed that the new Goodrich Silvertown with Lifesaver Tread gave more non-skid mileage than any of the other tires tested in its own price range. Imagine, the new Goodrich Silvertowns averaged 19.1% more miles before the tires wore smooth, which is the same as saying you'll get every 6 mile free. Yes, many tires cost more than the new Goodrich Silvertowns, but no tire at any price can give you the unequaled skid protection of the Lifesaver Tread, the exclusive blowout protection of the Golden Ply. Keep danger a stranger. Put a set of these life-saving long-mileage tires on your car without delay.
Now, back to the Shadow. Lamont Cranston and Margo Lane are being held by Al Rocco and Ed Regan, two escaped killers. When Lamont's power to change himself into the Shadow fails, Margo attempts to keep Rocco from shooting Lamont. In the ensuing scuffle, Rocco shoots and kills Margo Lane.
You killed her.
You killed Margo. Rocco, I'll kill you with my bare hands. Put that out.
I'll kill you.
Hey, wake up. Wake up,
huh?
Huh? You've been dreaming, you've been. And I got bruises to prove it.
And then it was all a dream? Shadow? You're not dead, Sleevy.
Not that I heard. Am I supposed to?
I guess it was all a horrible dream. It was so real. I dreamt about Rocco and Regan. You and Margo. Where is Margo?
That's why I woke you, Mr. Cranston.
What happened?
Well, I don't know. I figured Miss Lane was taking pretty long, so I went in the hat store to see.
And?
Well, the lady says Miss Lane left 15 minutes ago. A man followed her into the store, said something to her, and she left with him.
Lord, Shrevey, it's a dream coming true. They've got Margot.
Who?
Rocco and Regan, Shrevey. They swore they'd get even with me. They're trying to do it through Margot.
That dream sure must have been real. It sure must have been.
Yes, it was. Very real. Something about it didn't strike quite true. Now, what was it? What was it? I know. It wasn't something in the dream. It was something that should have been in that wasn't. It was the girl.
What girl?
Back when we broke up Rocco's gang, there was a girl who fronted for them. The police couldn't get enough evidence to convict her, but she was in it, all right. That would explain why the police can't find Rocco, too.
Well, how?
There must have been someone on the outside to help in that jailbreak, Shrevey. We've got to find that girl, Shrevey. She's the key to this whole thing.
Well, if we don't know who she is or where she is, won't that be difficult, Mr. Cranston? Won't that be?
Not too difficult, Shrevey. I've got an underworld contact who could find a tear in the ocean. I'll get back to you later, Shrevey. I'm going down to see Mr. Adolphus Claremont Poindexter.
Well, Miss Lane, so you finally decided to come too.
Man, who are you? What do you want with me?
My name is Rocco. Al Rocco.
Oh.
Well, you know of me, eh? Good. We got mutual friends, Miss Lane. I'm going to use you to stage a reunion.
What do you mean?
Lamont Cranston and I have an old debt to settle.
What's that got to do with me?
I can't contact Cranston without having to worry about the police, but if you call in...
I won't do it.
Be a lot more satisfactory paying Cranston what I owe him personally, Miss Lane. But if I have to pay him through you, I guess I'll just have to do it.
You're bluffing.
The guard at the prison died this morning, Miss Lane. I've got nothing to lose. They can only hang me once. Well?
What do you want me to do?
Call Cranston. You'll tell him to drive his car out to the Skyville Highway. 5 miles past the blinker, there'll be a dark sedan waiting.
But...
The telephone, Miss Lane. I haven't much time.
No, I won't. I this, you're hurting my wrist.
The telephone.
All right. All right, I'll call.
Alone today? The fair Miss Lane is not with you?
No, Mr. Poindexter. Did you get the information I wanted?
Oh, very disappointing, Mr. Cranston. Very disappointing.
You couldn't find the girl?
She dropped out of sight 5 years ago, Mr. Cranston. Lived a very good life. Not a thing on her.
But you did find her.
May I know what you want with her, Mr. Cranston? Hate about a girl who's gone straight, you know.
I expect her to lead me to Al Rocco and Ed Regan.
Rocco? Regan? Well, good day, Mr. Cranston. My regards to the charming Miss Lane.
Mr. Poindexter, you don't understand. Miss Lane has disappeared. Don't you see? I think Regan and Rocco have her in an attempt to get at me.
But Rocco's a killer. Besides, what makes you think this girl can lead you to him?
Call it a hunch. I just dreamed it up, but I know I'm on the right track.
But Rocco, you sure you wouldn't like to know about somebody else? Gunner Boyne, for instance?
Where's the girl, Mr. Poindexter? I've got to find her.
Her name's Annie Delatour now. Sweet girl. Very sweet girl.
Where can I find her, Mr. Poindexter?
Annie has an apartment on University Place. Third house from the corner. Top floor. A dozen exits. Over the roof and away like that.
Think Rocco and Regan, they'd hold out there?
Oh, hadn't thought of it. Oh, no. Can't be. Too small. Besides, Annie must have a place out of town. Spends weekend someplace, never in town.
Thanks, Mr. Poindexter. I'll see that the bartender arranges for your gratuity.
Splendid, Mr. Cranston. Splendid. By the way, if you do happen to see Al Rocco, be sure not to give him my regards.
This must be your apartment right here.
You want I should make like a messenger boy?
Yes, that might do it, Trudy.
I got a message for Miss Delatour.
Okay, Sonny, I'm coming. I've been expecting... What is this?
Merely a social call, Miss Delatour. We're coming in.
That's what you think, Mr. Alcott.
Of course, if you think Al Rocco might object.
What? Okay, come in.
What we figured on doing.
Now, what's this about Al Rocco?
Now, don't tell me you don't know Rocco. After all he used to do to you?
Okay, so you recognize me, but that was 5 years ago, and I've gone straight. You cop
here. I'm not a policeman, Annie.
What are you doing, then, auditioning a quiz show? Who are you, anyhow?
What a disposition.
My name's Lamont Cranston. Lamont. Heard of me, perhaps?
No. I gave up reading the funny papers when I found out Orphan Annie was really a midget.
What a card.
Look, I don't know how you found me after all these years, but it won't do you any good. I don't know anything.
There had to be someone on the outside to fix up a hideout for Rocco. That was you, Annie.
You want I should give her the third degree, Mr. Cranston? You want I should give her?
You stick that homely pan of yours any closer, and I'll carve my life's history on a dream, boy. You scare me about as much...
Hold it, Shreedy. Don't let her get to that phone.
Let me go!
Keep it quiet, Shreedy. This may be the break we need. Quiet, now.
This is Reagan, Annie. Annie?
Hmm?
Listen, I only got a minute. Al's getting itchy. He wants me to pick you up at the corner of 8th and Convent in half an hour. Will you be there?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you big gorilla, let me go.
I can't hold him anymore, Mr. Cranston.
Give me that phone.
You're too late, Annie. Regan just hung up.
Regan, why you...
I'd like to stay here and keep you company, Annie, but I've got a date.
Will you listen
Sorry,
to me?
Annie, but you won't get lonesome. I'll leave Sweetie here with you. And I'll give you a love to Rocco when I see him.
It's going to be sore when he finds out I didn't pick up Annie. I waited for it as long as I could. Better give Rocket a signal. He'll blast me before I reach the cabin.
That you, Regan?
Yeah, Rocco.
Hey. Where's Annie?
I don't know, Rocco. I told her to meet me like you said, but she didn't show up. I waited for an hour.
Something must have gone wrong.
You mean you think the cops got her? Hey, we better get out of here.
Not until I do what I came here to do.
Well, can't you forget that guy, Cranston? You'll never get away if we keep hanging around here.
Come inside. Well, Miss Lane, ready to tell us where we can reach Cranston?
I tell you, I don't know. I tried to reach him in his apartment, and he hasn't come in yet.
I haven't got time to fool you anymore. I'm going to kill you.
Shadow, thank heavens you're here.
Shadow.
Yes, Rocco. This is the Shadow. Now we do meet under different circumstances.
What are you? What are you?
Right here at your elbow, Rocco. See?
Quickly, Regan. He's a long time to be. Get him.
Oh, but now I'm over here, Rocco.
Hey, I heard all about that guy. He's not a yeoman. I'm getting out.
Regan! Come back! Regan!
He won't get far, Rocco. I took the trouble of letting the air out of all your tires.
You devil! What do you want with me?
I want nothing, Rocco. The state wants your life.
Listen, Shadow, the minute I hear anything that sounds like cops coming, the girl gets it first.
You...
Don't move, Miss Lane. I can't see the Shadow, but I can see you. Well, Shadow, looks like a stalemate.
Is it, Rocco? As soon as I let the air out of your tires, I took the precaution of removing the bullet from your gun.
What?
I just... Sorry to deceive you, Rocco. But I did have to distract your attention long enough to take your gun away from you.
I'm not licked, Shadow. I'm not...
No? That's what you think, Rocco. You hear those sirens? That's the police on their way here to make sure you keep that date at the death house.
Margo, what's been bothering you? You haven't said a word for the last 5 minutes.
That girl, Lamont. That Annie.
Hmm?
You must have known her pretty well 5 years ago to know where she lives.
What? Darling, I tell you, I never saw that girl before in my life.
Then how is it that you dream about her?
I didn't, Margo. That's just the point. She wasn't in the dream. And
you missed her. I see. and all alone.
Now, look, Doc.
No, you needn't explain to me, Lamont.
Margo, that kind of a girl wouldn't go for me.
Wouldn't go for you, Mr. Cranston. Oh, you don't know the half of it.
Oh, murder.
So she did go for him, Susie?
If she could have got loose, she would have gone for him. With a butcher knife, she would have gone for him.
Oh.
There, you see? Margo, I give you my word, if Shrevey keeps this hack, there are two things I'm going to do.
What?
First, I'm going to swear off sleeping. And second, I'm going to nail up that trap door of his.
Weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
Kids, was it scary or what, huh? You bet, so scary. Escape convict or not, I wouldn't take him on, no sir. Like I always say, people in stone houses shouldn't cast shadows, huh? Yes, I'm afraid those shadows just too cool for me. Even when one of the escapees had raced out in the woods, the shadow didn't lose control, no sir. I guess he figured a jailbird in the hand is better than two in the bush, huh? And old Margo, how about her, huh? She wasn't stupid either. When she had that gun to her head, she remained very silent. I guess she was afraid to shoot off her mouth, huh?
Oh, yes.
And yet, she wasn't too foolishly brave either. Otherwise, she may have had to bite the bullet, huh? But if nothing else, then she'd never have to worry about being low in iron, huh?
Oh, yes.
You know, if anything, I think she'd have to be more concerned about dying from lead poisoning, huh?
We are met to call from out of the past stories, strange and weird. Bellkeeper, toll the bell so that all may know we are gathered again in the Weird Circle.
Again, the immortal tale, the oblong box.
There, Captain. There she is.
And the Audace.
Aye.
Five aboard. Very well, turn about. We'll drop line and take them on.
Aye, sir. Stand by the mainsail. Long old sighted noise.
You make out what ship she's from?
Too far, Captain. She's American, though.
Aye.
Now we'll soon be on them.
Mate, if the captain's with them, send him up to my cabin.
Aye, aye, sir. Take in the mainsail! Easy now, don't run him under! He's two!
That's about all, Captain. We'd been at sea in the longboat for 2 days when you sighted us. Just about done in. My friend here, Mr. Allen, was the only passenger to survive.
You say you're from the packet ship Independent, eh?
Aye.
What cargo were you carrying?
Cotton, a little hemp, and some timber.
I see. And that was all?
Aye. Did you happen to pass some drift, Captain?
We did. Nothing you just spoke of. Would you care for a little more grog, gentlemen? Oh,
thank you.
And you, sir?
Yes. Yes, please.
No, we passed nothing adrift that you mentioned, but we did hoist aboard something rather strange, you might say. It may not have come from your ship, though. Could only make out the port of embarkation and the date. Charleston, South Carolina, August the 2nd, 1881.
That was our port. That was our date of sailing.
Captain, what was it you took aboard?
Two bodies. Passengers, I suppose. A man and a woman. Rather unusual, though. The woman was in a coffin. An oblong box. You seem startled, Mr. Evans.
I am. And the man?
That's the strange part. He was lashed to the coffin by an inch-thick rope. From your reaction, Mr. Allen, I presume you know something about the box?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Then, Mr. Allen, suppose you relate the entire story.
Very well. To tell you the truth, Captain, I'd intended telling no one. You see, as Captain Hardy told you, the dead man had been a friend of mine. I'd hoped the sea would keep its dead. The man whose body you found tied to that oblong box was an artist from New York. His name was Cornelius Wyatt. As I remember, Wyatt had been married only a few months when I met him quite by accident. It was at our port of sailing, Charleston. I'd been on board only a few minutes when I heard his voice calling me by my first name. I was quite surprised to see my old friend.
Edgar! Edgar Allan, hello there.
Wyatt, why, heavens, man, how are you?
Oh, it's good to see you. How long has it been?
Oh, a good year since I saw you last, at least. Let's see. Yes, since 1877.
All the places to meet you.
Now, tell me, Wyatt, is your wife aboard?
My wife? Well, yes.
Good. More people have raved about her astounding beauty to me than I could possibly count. I've sworn to see her with my own eyes.
Where is she?
I'm sorry, Edgar. I'm afraid that would be impossible. You see, she's ill in her cabin.
Oh, what a shame.
Well, then, later, I'm sure
you... No, no, no.
Really, I think she'll remain in bed for the rest of the trip. Her health wouldn't permit it.
Oh, come, Wyatt. You wouldn't cheat me of this chance to meet your beautiful wife. The sea air'll do her good. Or is it because you're jealous of such beauty?
Please keep that remark to yourself. My wife's appearance should be of no concern to you.
Oh, but Wyatt, I was only joking. I meant no harm.
Your humor is not appreciated, Mr. Allen.
Well, forgive me, I assure you I meant no harm.
I beg pardon, sir. You, Mr. Wyatt?
Yes?
That there box of yours, you're having it shipped in the hold?
Confound it, man, how many times must I give these instructions? My cabin, you understand? It must be put in my cabin. Must I tell the captain himself?
Sorry, sir, but there's hardly any room for such a large box in your
cabin. I don't care how little room there is. That box will go into my cabin if I have to move it there myself.
Sorry, sir.
Confounded fools. Must I beg them to carry out my instructions?
Is that the box?
Excuse me, Mr. Allen. The clumsy fools may drop it. I'd better watch them. I'll see you later. Although at the time I was surprised by my friend's sudden outburst, I passed it off to temperament. After all, he was an artist. At the moment, I was more concerned over the oblong box than over my friend. It bothered me quite a bit. I couldn't find a reason for his being so overwrought over the placement of a cumbersome, large wooden box. And furthermore, I couldn't find a reason for his use of one that shape. It was about 6 feet long and 2.5 feet wide. To me, its contents were a mystery. At first, I excused it as containing a number of his precious paintings. About 3 days out of Charleston, I met Wyatt again. He was walking about the deck. As I approached him, he cordially offered me his hand.
Hello there. Hello, Wyatt. Edgar, I believe I owe you an apology.
Apology?
Yes, you must forgive the way I acted the day before we sailed. I'm not as well as I should be.
Oh, think nothing of it.
Here, let's sit here. That's it. I'm under a severe strain, Edgar. Perhaps I should tell you. You are my friend. I should tell someone.
Why, of course.
What others have told you about my wife is true. She is beautiful. Very beautiful. I'm afraid, too beautiful.
Yes?
I was one of many, many suitors. I was the fortunate one. Why, I don't know. She doesn't love me, Edgar.
Are you sure she doesn't love you?
Yes, I'm sure, very sure. Since I've been married, she's done her utmost to make me jealous. She knows how I worship her beauty. She knows her power. Men have always loved her for it. They still do. I know, Edgar. I'm suffering because of it. There are men today who would give anything for my wife's hand. Anything. She knows it. She taunts me with it continuously. The way she looks at me, laughs at me.
You're in love with her?
Desperately.
And you'd never give her up?
Never.
And she knows this?
Of course. That's why she taunts me.
Well, perhaps if I could see her...
No. She's still ill. Ill.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This trip. You know why I'm going to Canada? You know why?
Painting?
I'm taking her away. Away from all those men. She'll learn to love me. I'll make her. I'll keep her beauty for myself.
Well, perhaps this is an extreme.
Extreme? No. No, it's the only thing to do. You don't know the torture I've suffered. Well, let's talk no more about it. I feel better now.
As you wish.
You will keep my confidence?
Oh, without question. Now, how's your painting coming, Wyatt?
I haven't touched a brush in months.
But the canvases you brought aboard, weren't they yours?
Canvases?
I suppose they were in the large box you have in your cabin.
Why do you suppose that?
Well, because of its unusual size.
That box doesn't concern you. It's none of your business.
I didn't say that I...
Don't ever mention that box again. I forbid you. You hear? Don't ever mention that box again.
Perhaps I've been too hasty, Captain. Perhaps the man just isn't well physically. Well, the box, it could contain something unimportant. I think I was overly curious, that's all. I've known him for a long while, you know. He's always appeared perfectly normal before.
And everything's been all right lately?
For the past few days, yes. He's been perfectly cordial.
Then I think perhaps it's best we pass over the entire matter. There's probably some logical, some simple story behind what's happened.
Here, more port?
No. No, thanks. I think it's best I be getting back to my cabin. Looks as though there's an unhealthy storm brewing along the coast. I'd best get back.
Oh, I noticed it getting a little rough. Will it hit us?
I can't tell yet. Well, good night, Mr. Allen. Perhaps you'll join me at dinner tomorrow night, eh?
Thank you, Captain. I'd be... Listen.
What?
Shh. I thought I heard... Listen. Again...
Nothing. I hear nothing. The wind, that's all. The events have made you a little nervous, I suppose.
No, wait. I'm sure I heard something strange. Groaning or something from out there.
I'll open the door. It's probably the ship's cat.
Captain, here, quickly!
The passageway's black. The steward probably took the lantern to...
Listen. Again. Hear it?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do.
It came from the darkness down there to the end of the passageway.
Somebody's in trouble. Who has the stateroom at the end of the passageway?
I think Wyatt. The first two are empty.
Well, come along. Pull your cabin door closed.
I'll get a lamp. The darkness...
No, I know my way. We may need the darkness.
Very well.
Now, stay close. The first two, you say, are empty?
Yes.
And this one, you believe, is Wyatt's.
It should be.
I'll stand here a moment. I'll listen again.
A knocking. Tapping.
I'll try this latch. I'll open it as quietly as possible.
There's no light under the door.
Stand back.
Easy now.
What? Blasted. It's locked. From the inside.
Well, someone is definitely in there.
I'm going to knock. Now listen closely. Someone is in there. You heard it? Hello in there. Is that you, Wyatt? This is Ellen. Anything wrong? Hello there. No answer. I don't like this. Open the door, Wyatt. It's the ship's captain. I'll be forced to break in. Here, help me. Help me if I count three.
Go on.
One. Two. Ready now. Three.
Where are you, Wyatt?
Wait. There's a lantern by the port. I'll strike a light. Stand here and... Empty. The room is empty.
a moment, both of us stood there in the gloom of Wyatt's cabin. We were sure somebody had been there, but a moment before, we'd heard them. And now the cabin was apparently empty. The door had been locked from the inside. Nobody could have left the room without our seeing them. Then suddenly Captain Hardy pointed to the right wall of the cabin. There in the dimness of the gloomy shadows.
Alan, this cabin and the one beside it are adjoined. Now, let me get the light and see if the adjoining door has been opened. Whoever left in a hurry. Here, Alan. Give me a hand. I can't reach the lantern. Blast it, Hardy! All right. Just stumbled over this blasted box. My hand.
The oblong box.
Excuse me, gentlemen. I didn't mean to intrude.
Quiet.
May I come in? There's another lamp on the table. Allow me, Captain Hardy, but where did you come from? How did you get into the passageway?
That's better.
Mr. Allen, I have been walking my wife on deck. May I introduce you? Oh, you may come in, Marjorie. Marjorie, this is Mr. Allen, the man who desired to meet you so much, and the captain of this vessel, Captain Hardy.
How do you do?
How do you do?
And now, gentlemen, may I ask the reason for your, breaking in?
We heard a noise, a cry.
We thought it was from your cabin.
That would have been impossible. There was nobody there.
Are you sure?
We heard...
Of course I'm sure. There was no one here, I tell you. And now, gentlemen, if you don't mind...
Wyatt, before we go...
Yes, Mr. Allen? Ask your wife to remove her veil. Marjorie, would you please oblige the gentleman? My wife, Mr. Allen.
Your wife? But I...
She is beautiful, isn't she?
Yes. Yes, she is.
You too seem stunned.
Quite. Yes, quite. Captain Hardy, come. Thank you, Wyatt.
One moment, Captain Hardy.
Yes?
Would it be too much to ask for a new cabin door? This one seems to have suffered slightly.
I'll see to it.
Good night, gentlemen.
Hurry to my cabin. His wife. Did you see his wife?
Yes.
She was hideous. His rave about her beauty. Why, he's mad, Captain. Hopelessly mad. She was horribly ugly. Yet she was familiar. I've seen her before. I know it. Where? Where?
Did you notice the door leading to the adjoining cabin?
No.
It was open slightly. Someone could have left Wyatt's cabin and reached the passageway through the empty one next to it.
Hardy?
Yes?
Your hand?
Huh?
Covered with blood. Well, you must have cut it yourself when you fell. Here, let me wash it off.
No. No, it isn't cut.
Yes, but that blood.
It isn't mine.
Well, then where did you...
The oblong box, Mr. Allen. The oblong box.
What was behind this terrible mystery, neither of us knew. We would inform the police as soon as we put to port. From then on, I saw nothing of Wyatt. 2 days passed since the incident in his cabin. Now, on the second day, Captain Hardy warned all the passengers of what was in store for us. We were forbidden on deck, confined to our cabins. We were being blown out to sea by a furious hurricane wind. On the fateful night, I was lying fully clothed on my bed. The sea was sickening. The ship was yawing terribly with each plunge. I was expecting the worst at any moment. Then suddenly, above the roar of the terrible gale, I heard a strange sound coming from the passageway before my cabin. I was a little bewildered at first. For a few moments, I sat there on my bed, wondering. And then...
Edgar! Mrs. Wyatt! Do you hear me?
What is it?
I need your help, Edgar! I need your help!
Go back to your cabin, Wyatt. You hear? Get out of the passageway. It's dangerous. The ship
may... Please open the door. You must. You must help me. You're my friend, Edgar. Please.
Very well.
What? Good heavens. My box. I've got to get it on deck. I've got to. The ship may break in two at any moment. Please, please help me. I can't manage it alone. Please.
Well, you must be completely insane. The storm is too high. It's suicide, I tell you. You'll be blown overboard.
Shut the door. You don't have to go on deck. I have some rope. I'll lash myself to the face. I'll be safe. Please.
Yes, but your wife. You can't leave your wife alone now. Go back to her. Snap out
of it. Just up the stairs. Please, Edgar. You're my friend. Please, Edgar, please.
Very well. To the top of the stairs.
The other end. Take the other end. That's it.
Go on. I have it. Hurry, it's heavy.
All right. Here. This way.
All right.
Up these stairs.
I've got it.
Here. Don't drop it, Edgar. Don't drop it. All right. All right. A little further, Edgar. Just a little further. Now.
There. Oh. This is as far as I go.
Oh, thank you, Edgar. Thank you. You don't know what this means.
Now, go back to your cabin.
I can't. I must get my box on deck.
Then I leave.
No, please. One other favor. Hold this hatch while I push the box out.
I beg you, why accuse your head? The water will swamp us. Listen to it.
Please, Edgar, please.
Well, then, stand back. I'll open the hatch. I'm not responsible for you, you fool.
Hurry! Confound you! Hurry! We'll be swamped!
For heaven's sake, Wyatt, you'll never make it! Wyatt, watch out! Come back, you fool! Come back! I've got to close it! Come back!
What in thunder race are you doing?
Wyatt, he's out there. He took the box.
Good heavens, he's done for. It's too late to help him now. I'm afraid we're going to have to abandon ship. She's breaking. Starboard life board, are you there? Make for it.
Yes, but Mrs. Wyatt, she's below. She'll be killed. I'll get her first.
The starboard boat, Edgar. The starboard boat.
Mrs. Wyatt, to the boat! Mrs. Wyatt, we're sinking! Come on!
Hurry,
this way, run!
No, wait, please, let me...
In the name of heaven, woman, come on, quick! No time to lose!
Come on, Mrs. Wyatt!
Mrs. Wyatt!
Then suddenly she disappeared before me. Water gushed down the passageway. She was swallowed by it. I struggled forward and made my way to the starboard boat. I jumped for the swinging davit and lowered myself as speedily as possible into the longboat. Captain Hardy joined me with three others of his crew. And then, just as we pushed out from the trembling mass of wreckage, I saw it. Hardy did too. Standing to aft, I saw Wyatt. He was binding himself tightly to the oblong box. He stood there for a moment, I thought, laughing. Then in one brief instant, he was gone with the ship into the sea.
And that's all?
Yes.
I see. Would you gentlemen be so kind as to follow me? This should prove rather interesting. This way, gentlemen.
Captain, when did you find this box?
Yesterday afternoon. In here, please. Mr. Allen, hand me that lantern and watch the stairs, please. They're rather sharp here.
Lead on.
Ordinarily, we would not have bothered with a floating body. Generally some poor wretch from a wrecked vessel. However, due to the box and the peculiar circumstances, I thought it best to hoist it on board.
Yes, but the decomposition...
Oh, the salt water helped preserve them for a while. I thought we could reach New London safely with them. However, since we were blown off our course by that wind, it'll be a good day and a half before we reach land. I'm afraid I shall have to commit them both back to the sea. Mr. Allen, swing that door open, please, will you? Over there.
in that corner.
Yes. Yes, that's the box.
Captain Hardy, would you kindly hold the lantern while I lift this blanket?
Certainly.
Is this the man you call Wyatt?
Poor devil. Hardly recognizable. Yes, that's Wyatt.
And now, Mr. Allen, if you would give me a hand with the top of this box. It had been firmly nailed. However, we pried it loose when we took it aboard. Just pull up that end carefully.
Good heavens.
Even after 2 days at sea, death did not destroy that waxen beauty.
It's almost impossible.
Still so beautiful. You notice the wound over the heart?
Yes. Mr. Allen, that was the beauty Mr. Wyatt talked of. Why, of course. This must have been his wife. But wait, the other Mrs. Wyatt. Oh, yes, of course. I knew I'd seen her somewhere before. The maid. Their personal maid. Yes, now I remember. She tried to tell me something before she drowned. Wyatt murdered his real wife.
If only we had done something sooner.
Murdered his wife? How could he? Why?
Insanely jealous. Terribly jealous. To die with her would be better than to live with her and her beauty. He planned to murder her on that trip when I saw them stowing that box. Remember the groans? She was murdered that night. The blood. It was fresh. Remember the tapping we heard as he nailed her in this coffin? I think we'd better leave. Yes. Yes, Wyatt. Your wife is very, very beautiful.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have heard another immortal tale in The Weird Circle. Bellkeeper, toll the bell. Be here in this lonely cave by the restless sea once again next time for another immortal tale in The Weird Circle.
The Weird Circle is distributed exclusively by Nostalgia Broadcasting Corporation, Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Oh, kids, wasn't that scary? Oh, you bet. I guess that's one husband you could say loved his wife to death, huh?
Yes.
Really, and then some. They should have reminded him of his wedding vows. At death, you're supposed to part, huh? But if he loved his wife when she was alive and so mean to him, why not love her equally when she was really cold, huh?
Yes.
You might say she cut him down once too often, so he returned the favor in dying color, huh? I always warn artists against marriage, but do they listen? No, they all take a stab at it anyway, huh? Oh. Well, anyway, as I was saying, I guess they're just too clever for their own good. Knife cleaver, huh? And all this time, I thought he was just a painter. But he was also a mason of sorts. He sure sculpted hair, huh? But at least he took his appreciation of painting with him to the grave. With the help of his dead wife and a few sharks, he did his final watercolor in red. Huh?
That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program,
The Whistler. I'm a whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak. Yes, friends, it's time for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, rated tops in popularity for a longer period of time than any other West Coast program in radio history. And Signal gasoline is top, too. Tops in quality. It takes extra quality, you know, to give you extra mileage. And Signal is the famous Go Farther gasoline. So look for the Signal circle sign in yellow and black that identifies friendly dealer-owned Signal stations from Canada to Mexico. And now the Whistler's strange story. Quiet Suicide. It was in a drab room in a commercial hotel in Chicago that Frank Rimmel finally made up his mind. And in a curious way, it was quite appropriate that the decision should come to him there, partway between Los Angeles and New York, partway between two lives. He'd known from the first, of course, that a showdown was inevitable sooner or later. But as time went on, he began to recognize the desperate form the showdown would take. He came to realize that the only way out was murder. The train tickets were in his pocket. His bags were packed, ready to go when he picked up the phone.
Operator.
This is Mr. Reynolds in room 617. I'd like to call New York. Mrs. Frank Reynolds. Long Island, 89038.
Thank you, sir. One moment, please.
Right.
Long distance. I'm calling Long Island, New York. Is this Mr. Frank Reynolds?
Yes, that's right.
I have a call for you from Los Angeles, Mr. Reynolds.
Los Angeles? Look, I'm calling New York.
Go ahead, Long
Just
Island.
A moment, operator.
Frank.
I could.
Frank.
Millicent, how did you...
Darling, I had to call you. I knew you'd be staying here.
Oh, I'm sorry, Millie. I can't talk now. My plane leaves in
Frank,
a few minutes.
You have to tell me the truth. I can't stand it any longer.
What's the matter, dear?
You're running off that way, not even saying goodbye.
Oh, darling, I told you I had to rush off about that business deal in New York.
But it's more than that. Isn't it, darling?
What do you mean, Millie?
Tell me, Frank, you've got to be fair with me. If it's another woman,
Another woman?
It's on my mind all the time. I can't eat, I can't sleep.
Listen, Millicent, I told you 100 times. There's no other woman, dear. No one but you. Please believe that.
I was ready with New York, Mr. Reynolds. Shall I put them on?
No, no. Can't you tell I'm still on this call? Get off the line. Millie.
Yes.
Millie, believe me for once, will you? You're imagining things. I love you, baby. There's no one else. I'll just be a good girl till I get back.
All right, Frank. I'm sorry. But you can't blame me. After all, I am your wife.
Yeah, sure. Goodbye, Angel.
Operator.
You can go ahead with New York now.
Oh, yes, sir. I'm sorry about the interruption, sir. I knew you wanted to talk to your wife in New York, but when I found out your wife was still in Los Angeles...
Never mind that. Have you got my New York number?
Yes, sir. I'll connect you. Hello? Hello?
Diane.
Frank.
Diane, listen, honey. I haven't much time. You're expecting me day after tomorrow off the train at Penn Station?
You mean you aren't coming?
Oh, sure, but listen. I'll be in New York tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm flying the rest of the way. Be in early. It'll give us at least a day together, alone. You can meet me at LaGuardia, Fly 8, American Airlines.
Frank, you do such strange things. What'll I tell Uncle George and the family?
Well, don't tell him anything. That's the idea. Explain to your Uncle George that you're going into town early to shop for a day or two. Oh, we'll skip the whole Long Island tribe and just be together for a day. Sound good?
I think so.
You think so?
It's wonderful, Frank. Yes, you're so clever, darling. I'm a lucky girl to have such a smart husband.
Yes, Frank, the operator has reason to be confused. Because there are two Mrs. Reynolds. One in New York, one in Los Angeles. And you're trembling as you hang up the receiver in Chicago. It becomes even more clear to you now with the two lives you've been so careful to keep apart, almost meeting accidentally by telephone. How ruinous it would be if Diane and Millicent should ever get together. And the only way out is the desperate way, isn't it? It's too bad, too. Diane is so young, so pretty, so very trusting. At least, she always seemed to believe you. But at the airport, you wonder from the moment she meets you if something's wrong.
American Airlines, flight 8, arriving at gate 3.
Oh, yes, Frank.
Diane! Hello!
Oh, excited to see me?
Yes, Frank, I'm excited.
To drive out?
No, the town car's there.
Well, how about a taxi?
It's right over here.
Oh. Where to, folks?
The Harding Arms apartment. It's on the east side on 52nd.
Harding Arms?
I found it last night after you called.
Oh.
I think you'll like it, Frank.
Anyone know I'm here?
Not a soul. Uncle George thinks I'm shopping. He's meeting me in the morning at Penn Station to be there when your train comes in.
Oh, that's perfect.
And you've really arranged to be on it?
Why not? Just set an early alarm. I'll run out to New York and get back aboard the train coming from Chicago.
You've planned it all pretty carefully, haven't you, darling?
Of course. I wanted to have you all to myself for a change.
So? You went to all this trouble. Tickets, the telephone calls, everything. Just to be alone with me for a while.
Well, what's wrong with that?
And still, you haven't even kissed me yet.
Oh, I'm sorry, no. Diane.
No, please, Frank, not now.
Oh, Diane, what's the matter?
I try not to believe it, Frank. I try not to listen to Uncle George. Marissa.
No, what are they saying now?
The same thing. That you married me for my money. But that now that Uncle George has made it impossible for you to get a hold of it, you'll leave me.
Well, then what am I doing here, right now?
That's what I don't know, Frank.
Well, they don't waste any time, do they? They get right to you the minute I'm out of town. Diane, are you sure they don't know I'm here?
I told you once, Frank.
All right. Come here.
Oh, Frank.
That better?
It's this way every time. They tell me all those... They make me listen to them, and then...
Then what?
Oh, you kiss me like that and I forget all about it.
Good. Keep it that way now, huh?
I'll try, Frank. I promise.
Atta girl. It's very important to me, Diane, this day together. I want it all to be perfect. Going to be murder, Frank. The only way out of your marriage to Diane that will leave your other marriage in Los Angeles intact. Divorce is out of the question, naturally. Any notoriety, any publicity on the national press wires, and Millicent might get strange ideas about your business trips to New York. There'd be investigations, bigamy charges, two divorces instead of one. And, of course, the prospect of working for a living when you got out of prison. So it's murder now. A fairly simple kind of murder. The ingredients are all there. Diane, despondent, disillusioned in marriage. A nice, quiet suicide that will rate perhaps 2 inches of copy in the New York paper. No more.
You like the apartment, Frank?
Oh, it's wonderful. 3 rooms, fireplace, no nosy maids, a janitor.
Is it everything you wanted?
Everything. Even a back entrance. Oh, you couldn't have done better, darling. We're all set. Yes, Frank, all set with the murder planned for tonight. With your alibi still solid on that eastbound train due tomorrow morning at Penn Station. You were careful back in Chicago, weren't you? Arranging things so it would be almost impossible to check either the plane or train ticket. So no one will be able to say you left the train there and arrived in New York ahead of us. On the way to dinner with Diane, the plan begins to operate. You stop the cab at a drugstore. Explain that you want to order a prescription sent up to the apartment and go inside.
Yes, sir?
Oh, I'd like this filled.
25 tablets, luminobarbitine.
Yeah, it's my wife.
Mm-hmm. Made out to Mrs. Frank Reynolds.
Isn't that right?
Yes, but I wish she'd come in herself. That's a sign for it. We have to be careful filling prescriptions for sleeping medicine, particularly anything as potent as this.
I understand. Well, look, I'd rather not wait anyway. Why not send it up to her? Harding Arms apartment. She'll be there to sign it for herself. Matter, Diane? Don't you like the restaurant?
Oh, yes, it's perfectly fine.
I don't know where we'd get a better dinner.
That's not just then. I'm sorry, but it has to end.
Oh, you mean Uncle George, huh?
What? Yes. Yes, Uncle George. He'll be with us tomorrow.
Yeah. Like William the Conqueror.
He'll probably know all about this.
How? You set the alarm, didn't you?
Yes, but...
Okay. I'll get up, breeze out to Newark. You can greet me with open arms when I step off the track at Penn Station.
You just don't know, Uncle George. Look over there.
Huh? What do you mean?
That man who just came in by the hat check stand.
What about him?
I didn't tell you, Frank. But Uncle George has got his mind set on my divorcing you. He wants to prove to
me. Oh, what?
That man over there is one of Uncle George's detectives.
How long has this been going on?
Since you were here before. Uncle's funny. He even has them follow me sometimes.
You? What for?
I don't know. Does it really matter, Frank?
Well, it matters with me. Did he see us, Diane?
I don't think so. Not yet.
Let's get out of here.
Frank, it's no use. Let me finish my drink.
I said let's get out of here. I'll mix you a drink at home.
Frank?
Yeah?
Anyone see you come in?
Not a soul.
It seems silly, you using the back entrance, me coming in the front.
What took you so long?
This.
Oh. My prescription.
The desk clerk gave it to me. I had to sign for it. Is it right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's right. I'll fix you that drink I promised you. What's the matter?
It tastes awfully strong. Did you forget the soda?
Now, you're going soft on me, darling. Down the hatch.
Skull.
Skull.
Yeah. This has been a funny evening. A funny visit.
There you go again. What's the matter?
Visit. That's an interesting word, visit.
Look, darling,
My husband's visiting me for a few days. Nice to see you, dear. Nice to look across the room and find you there.
You're in a strange mood tonight.
No. Not strange, really. Just devoted. And maybe a little disappointed. Love does a lot of funny things, you know. Chops up your eyes and your ears. Keeps you believing in someone no matter what people tell you.
You're just tired, Diane.
Yes. I guess I am. Tired of secret meetings with my own husband. Tired of lying to Uncle George, trying to defend you when I...
When you what?
There is another woman, isn't there, Frank? In Los Angeles?
Don't be silly.
It's like a movie. Sometimes, when I close my eyes and try to sleep, I see you getting off the train, meeting a smart-looking blonde in a red singlet.
You better get those ideas out of your head.
Do you mind if I sketch out of you?
Not at all.
I really don't think you're so terrible, darling. I just love you.
Sure.
Men think women don't know. They think they don't even suspect a little bit. But they do. They do, Frank. They do.
Yes, Frank. That sleeping medicine works fast. You watch the clock. 7:30, 8, 9, and then finally reach for her wrist and feel her pulse. There's nothing there now. Nothing. takes a few minutes more to check the room, tidy it up, get rid of the cigarette butts that aren't stained with lipstick, wipe off fingerprints, scrape the druggist label off the bottle of sleeping pills, and then quietly, you let yourself out the door and hurry toward the back service stairs, and then...
Is this the floor?
Yes, sir. Mrs. Reynolds' apartment is 20B, around the corner near the rear stairway.
I search is here.
Yes, she came in an hour or so ago.
Alone?
Yes, sir, alone. Shall I wait?
Stand by a minute. I'll see if she'll talk to me for a while.
I'll wait. It's the detective, Frank, coming from the elevator. You're trapped, with a choice of meeting him or running back down to the lobby. It's then that you feel the key in your hand.
The apartment. Yeah.
Mrs. Reynolds, are you all right?
I know she's in there, sir. Bring her to pass me, will you?
There's no time to think, Frank. You hold your breath, press back against the wall behind the door, and then...
She must be in there, sir. There's only one way out of the building at this time of night.
Yeah, open it up.
That's it.
Mrs. Reynolds! You take the only chance you have, Frank. As they go in, you slide around the door in the darkness and then out into the hall.
Here, watch
this. Get the light. Mrs. Reynolds! You aren't conscious of time now, Frank. Maybe it's an hour, maybe two, since that awful moment in the apartment. But things are beginning to settle down now as you sit in the dim railroad station in Newark, waiting for that train of yours to pull in. You settle back against the bench, vaguely aware of the smell of the oiled wood floors. And then the board creaks slightly as someone moves towards you in the darkness.
Got a light, buddy?
What?
Oh. Oh, yeah. Here you are. Sorry. Yeah, thanks very much. Oh, mind if I keep these?
Hmm? Oh, no. Go ahead.
No. Dull hour, 3 in the morning. Waiting for a train?
Yeah.
It's a funny thing, guy sitting in this drab station waiting for the train from Chicago at this hour.
Listen, I...
Yes, sir? Odd thing. You know, you could grab a taxi outside and get to New York in an hour. Still, you're waiting here. Why?
Look, you can figure that out for yourself.
Sit down, Mr. Reynolds.
How did you... My name...
It was printed on that match folder you handed me.
What do you want?
I want you to help me decide whether your wife's death was suicide or murder.
She dead?
Yeah. After talking to her uncle, I decided to drop over here and see if you really were on the train.
Oh, well, listen, I can explain about that.
You can save all that for later. I'm Pearson, Mr. Reynolds, New York homicide. Why don't we skip the train? Start back to New York right now. They're waiting for us back at your apartment.
So now you're faced with it, Frank. Your big alibi, the keystone in your whole plan, is gone. Once or twice on the way back to the apartment, you almost decide to get it over with. To tell Pearson the whole truth and avoid the dread questioning you know is sure to come. But somehow you're not quite ready to give up. And when you finally walk into the apartment to face Diane's Uncle George, you get an idea of a way to bluff it through.
I tell you, this man's a murderer, Pearson.
Just a minute, Mr. Breckenridge. Just a moment. Let me answer.
I told you. I can explain everything.
All right, you'll have a chance to, but let me start out, huh? Now, it seems you're on your way to New York on the train. You switch to a plane somewhere without telling anyone that you're white. Figure you can intercept the same train a day or so later. Give yourself a solid alibi.
There's no use denying it, Frank.
Who's denying it?
What?
You mean you admit it?
Most of it. It's one word I don't like. Alibi.
Oh, it's true about the train. I set it up by telephone from Chicago.
You had a good reason, of course.
A very good reason.
What are you talking about?
You, Uncle George. You've never given us a minute's peace. Sticking your nose into our business, trying to poison Diane's mind against me. That's why I did it, Pearson. I wanted that day together. Just Diane and I, my wife, the two of us.
by ourselves.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
I was forced into it, Lieutenant. Ask him about the private detective. Yeah. We go out for a quiet little dinner. At 7 o'clock last night, one of his bloodhounds follows us into the Shamrock Club.
We know all about that. So, what happened after you got home?
I told her. She either forgets Uncle George or I was through. She broke down. She got hysterical. Well, I walked out. I paced the streets for a while, and then I went over to Newark.
You didn't come back here?
No.
I see. Mr. Kittredge, will you step in here, please?
Kittredge?
Yes. A druggist, Mr. Reynolds. I want you to meet him.
Yes, Lieutenant.
Oh, this is Mr. Reynolds, Mr. Kittredge. Do you,
Yes, sir. That's the man who ordered the prescription.
Oh, of course. If you thought hard enough, Mr. Kittredge. You remember I told you that prescription was for my wife.
Then why did you order it?
Because she asked me to, on the way to dinner.
And she gave you a prescription made out by a doctor in Los Angeles?
Los Angeles? Why, I can't.
Yes. You don't know how a Los Angeles doctor could prescribe pills for your wife when she's never been there. Well, neither do I. There's something else, Mr. Reynolds. I've been in the homicide division for 8 years now. I guess I've investigated 100 suicides, and a lot of them women. You know something, Mr. Reynolds? I have yet to find one, particularly a woman, who didn't want to have the last word.
I don't know what you mean.
A suicide note. Your uncle's detective comes in here, finds the girl in the bed, a bottle of sleeping pills next to her. Now, does it seem logical she'd set up a thing like that without doing the one thing they all do?
I told you. She was despondent. She wasn't thinking straight when I left her.
That's what you say. I say she went to bed with every intention of getting up. All right, come on, Reynolds. You can get in touch with your lawyer on the way to headquarters.
Now, wait a minute. I didn't do anything. Lieutenant, you've got to believe
me.
Yeah,
I get it. I've got no time for that.
Just a minute, Lieutenant.
Huh?
I just can't take this on myself. What I feel personally and what is just are two different things, I guess. Diane was in Los Angeles a month ago.
What? You mean she was?
Well, that's interesting.
I should have told you before, I suppose, but...
Oh, think nothing of it. And I suppose you have the suicide note tucked up your sleeve?
Well, I do have one, as a matter of fact. An old one. You see, Diane did try to kill herself just last month. And that's why I've been having her followed.
Well, Reynolds, I guess I was wrong. Yeah, we all make mistakes once in a while. I'm sorry.
So it's over now, Frank. A few more questions and you'll be released. Free of suspicion that you murdered Diane, wife number one. Free to go back to Los Angeles and someone they know nothing about, Millicent, wife number two. And it's ironic that Diane's Uncle George came through with the one statement that could save you. Yes, you were as surprised as Lieutenant Pearson to hear that Diane had actually gone to Los Angeles. And you realize now that she knew the truth about Millicent. That if you'd left her alone, she might have tried suicide a second time, successfully. You're going to be careful now, Frank. No missteps, no false moves, taking the cue from the lieutenant.
Yeah, this is a tough business I'm in, Reynolds. Got to play hunches, you know.
Yeah.
I came into the room tonight and I took a look around. I see there isn't a note. Say to myself, this lady went to bed figuring she'd be up and going the next day. Intent, you know. Yeah, it's pretty important stuff.
I understand, Lieutenant.
Yeah. I was trained to look for intent above everything else. Well, sometimes you go wrong, though. Just like now. Sometimes. Well, now. What do you know about that? Intent, you know. That's what they're going to ask me, Reynolds. What was in the little lady's mind?
The clock. I don't understand it.
I don't blame you. Now, why do you suppose she set that alarm clock? I'll tell you why. She expected it to wake her up. She expected to be alive right now. You know, I guess we'll just have to start the questions all over again. That clock's a little noisy for a nice, quiet suicide.
Ooh, kids, that was scary. So scary. The man with two wives. I'd be scared enough with just one wife. How about you, huh? Oh, like I've heard that people describe their ex-wives as pills, but that's really overdosing it, huh? I'll say. And speaking of ex-wives, perhaps I should instead say some ex-wives, huh? Really? Hey, well, at least this is one instance where the husband wasn't the one sleeping around, huh? Afraid so. And it was such a good plan, too. That's the part that really hurts. Too bad the detective got alarmed, huh? You might even say he had the whistler blown on him, yes? Afraid so, afraid so. I bet old Frank by now is really ready to beat the clock, huh? Yes, well, he should have known better. I think everybody's heard the tried and true warning. Time will tell, huh? Really? And speaking of time, which Frank is probably still serving, I had better fly. So until next week, same bat time, same bat station, this is the Count reminding you to watch your watch, huh?
Now returns control of your radio device to you. Until next week. No.